This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Welcome back, coaches, to the Talking Split Podcast. I am Rob Calder, the Coach Development Coordinator at Basketball Victoria. Joined with me is the High Performance Coach for the Country Men, Nathan Cooper-Brown. Welcome, Coops.
Great to be back.
And the High Performance Coach for the Country Women. Welcome, Zoe.
Happy to be here.
Excellent. So, again, apologies for the rough audio last week on the podcast. That was not to our usual standards, unfortunately. But
that's so upsetting because there were so many good takeaways in it, too.
You know what's worse is we recorded that, like, 2 months ago, and we've been trying for 2 months to try and get that audio better, and it has sucked every time. Doesn't matter what I do. I even tried AI for the first time as to try and, like, take some noise out, and that was as good as we got it. So the robots are coming, everyone, and they will take over.
But I, for one, welcome our robot overlords.
Exactly. It is coming without a question. So the Talking Split handle on Twitter and Instagram, so you can go and follow that if you like. We'll be putting the podcast out on that as well and some other resources over the course as we're getting around to various venues as now that this block has started up again, which is always good value. Under 18 Nationals, we'll just talk about it really quickly. Coops played off for a gold medal. Pretty happy with your boys?
Incredible week. So proud of the athletes, so proud of the coaches, the parents, and importantly, everybody who contributed to that success, especially over the past 12 months where we really feel like, you know, we're back and we're moving. And, you know, that includes, you know, Zoe and our hub leads and all these people that were dedicated to trying to get us back to where we needed to be after Ballarat. And I think importantly too, it was how we played, you know, not the, just that we had the success. And we'd had some discussions. I know us three had some discussions around that lack of country grit that had kind of been lost, and we found it again, you know. And, you know, Port, we lost our 7'1" center, you know, a few weeks out. We bring in a young man from Yarrawonga / Wangaratta
who's not 7'1".
Who's definitely not 7'1". He's at the opposite end of that spectrum. But yeah, he came and he just played his heart out, and from an injury replacement, yeah, he's starting in a gold medal game. Just because of the way he defended, the way he dived on loose balls, the way he put the team first, and just a wonderful demonstration of who we were and what we went on to do. And I couldn't be more rapt. It was awesome. First medal in that age group for us in 9 years.
Okay, who was the last coach that got that?
Tari, funny enough. He was on the staff. He reminded me last night.
Yeah, funny. It's always very easy to miss someone until they let you know.
Yeah, I know you're listening, Tari. Couldn't let us have that one, could you?
That makes sense. And Zoe, the country women, how'd they go?
Yeah, disappointing result for us. You know, got a really good lesson in tournament play, though. There was one game we lost that basically put us fourth in our pool because everyone was beating everybody else. And it was a game we had the ability to win, and losing that sent us then into fourth, which put us in a crossover against first in the other pool, which was Vic Metro. And because we'd had to fight in every single game just to get to that point, there were just no tickets left. So a really good a lesson in, you know, how tournament play can help you, but also can sort of foot you up the butt a little bit. But you know, the girls continue to fight, and at the end of the day, I'm proud of that. So, you know, we're back to the drawing board and making sure that, you know, seventh isn't the result that we're going to get again.
Excellent. It is always a tough week, especially when you go to a national tournament in under 18s. It's such a different world. And, of course, this age group didn't go 2 years earlier. So in the Victorian space, and obviously neither did New South Wales to the nationals that happened then. So it's a little bit of a weird tournament when you walk in. It's like, geez, I don't know really where we were 2 years ago. Were we around the mark? Have we progressed, regressed, somewhere in between? It's a difficult one. And tournament playing in general is always fun, even if you're on the
except
right
when you're on the bad side of it, like we were. Yeah,
you caught the wrong pool, the wrong crossover, and all of a sudden you go from playing off for shiny things to, oh, do we have to play for this? Like, this isn't as fun.
Yeah.
So it's a rough one, but that's just how it rolls. We did mention a little while back that National Volunteer Week is coming up from the 15th to 21st of May. We have had a few people send in audio clips and written feedback on their coaches. When I say feedback, nice feedback, compliments, very complimentary notes coming through. We'll try and make that a little bit more of a regular thing. So rather than do a whole show on it, we might try and make that a little bit more of a regular sort of shout-outs type thing where coaches can sort of mail in and say, hey, look, this coach has really helped me out, or I want to give a shout out to this coach that coaches my child and does a fantastic job. We know coaches, we certainly don't do it for the accolades and the financial benefits, but we certainly do it because we enjoy doing it. It is nice to get a little bit of a pat on the back every now and again from the random people out there. So if there are people out there that would like to thank their coaches, starting from Volunteer Week will be the first week that we kick this off, tip this off. I'm very mindful of people in basketball spaces that use kickoff. We have tip off. I don't know why we do it, but you know, the person that just screwed it up, of course. But it is one of those areas where I would like to get coaches a little bit more credit for the work they put in. We know it's voluntary. We know it's long hours. We know it's early mornings. We know it's late nights. We know it's largely thankless, except for the little Rebel Sport voucher you get at the end. And there's only so many cones you can buy by the time you get to the end of the season. But it is something that I think we can do for coaches to show a little bit more appreciation in that space. So if there is anyone out there that would like to send stuff in, you can obviously slide into the DMs on Instagram or Twitter, or you can just send us an email and we'll sort it out from there. So we are talking a really interesting topic, I think, from that may not directly relate to coaches, but will certainly relate to a lot of people in that basketball space in particular. Walking around a lot of the courts at the moment in particular, when teams are training, I'm noticing a massive drop-off in numbers. Training sessions in particular. So there's a lot of reasons for that. Injuries, like they certainly happen. You can't really avoid those too much. Sickness, just in general, like we know this is sort of cold and flu season coming through. The weather. Sometimes you just get there and it's like, geez, 8 degrees indoors. Doesn't seem like the best time to be going and playing basketball. Well, strap in, there are worse sports and we're about to talk about those. But and, you know, even just the fact that people get to the winter months and they go, yeah, Bali seems better. I might shoot off for a whole day instead. So the numbers at our training sessions do tend to drop off a little bit. But one of the other reasons, which we haven't sort of touched on yet, is that players play a number of different sports. And we all know, we joke about it, that the basketball does go for 13 months of the year. It is difficult to get a little bit of a break in there, it does feel like at times. But the kids' calendars in particular, when we're talking juniors especially, I suppose, yeah, those are certainly kids that go to school, obviously play basketball if they're involved with us, but probably play two or three other sports. They're part of a family unit that also has mum and dad trying to do various things. They'll have piano lessons or guitar lessons or French tutoring or something like that along the way as well. Then they've got to have some homework. Then there's got to be social time and all those types of things. So it is difficult to make sure that everyone actually turns up for training sessions. And I'll probably talk more to the rep level, I suppose, at this point, like Sunday mornings in particular. It's just a really hard time to get kids at practice at the moment. It's now that footy has started and a lot of the local competitions, it is very, very hard to get your full group of kids on the court at the same time. And I know one of the clubs starts at 7:30 now on a Sunday morning, which is rough. Like that is, yeah, that's a tough gig for a lot of coaches. So credit to them for doing it. Like that's phenomenal work on their end, but that is an early start on a Sunday morning. And I don't know that the parents super appreciative of the early Sunday morning start, depending on what the Saturday nights look like. But what have you done previously, Coops? Like I know in you've been in this space a fair bit with both VJBL and as a director of coaching. What have you done to try and not negate the impact of other sports, but just make sure kids are still turning up at practice?
Yeah, we tried a few things. One, we got our under-18s out of Sundays pretty quickly, knowing that obviously they're starting to do things like more socializing, you know, over the weekend. We found that we had a lot that were working and working weekend shifts. So and that helped us a lot. So we moved the 18s as part of our, you know, senior program. So it was 18s Youth League and the Siebel team all trained together on a Tuesday and Thursday night, and we used two courts, and obviously we managed that as best we could. But that was a really good start. That helped us. We made Wednesday night, every team trained from back to back at one venue. And I know I've spoken about this before, but that allowed me to be there. And we really focused in on style of play, team chemistry, culture, just making sure that we were ticking off a lot of the things that we'd established that were going to be important for us to have success as a program, have success on a Friday night, but most importantly, keep our athletes moving forward. And then Sunday became more about a skill development session. And we knew we were going to have clash with football. We knew we were going to have clash with netball. So we understood that we were probably going to have to have some wiggle room there, and that if we made that session on Sunday more about skill development, it was less likely to impact the athletes', you know, understanding of systems and style on a Friday. So we didn't want them to have a less enjoyable experience. But then we also offset that with morning sessions. So we ran some more version of a session, obviously depending on the level and so on, Monday to Friday. And so we could find ways to get athletes back in the gym if they were going to miss things, or, you know, if they just happened to have a holiday and they missed and they didn't want to miss, you know, maybe there was, again, some way that we could offset it. So, yeah, it was, you know, we had to sit down and we had to have a good think about it, but those are a few things that we tried because we wanted to make sure that we were creating a program that supported generalization.
Yeah, and I think that's half the battle is trying to find ways to be innovative in this space. Like, I think Sunday mornings has traditionally been a VJBL training slot for a lot of associations for a number of years. Like we were joking about it before, like when I first started coaching VJBL stuff, it was always a bit of an unwritten rule that when we got to the winter months, the boys wouldn't train on a Sunday morning because they had footy, but the girls would have to. Whereas now we're getting a lot of our female athletes playing AFL as well. And Zoe, what have you seen around the place that sort of helped or hurt or worked towards a solution here?
Yeah, well, I think Coops has hit the nail on the head. Sundays works against what we're trying to do, mainly from a – that's when a lot of other sports are playing. When you talk about AFL being so big in this country, a lot of the times their games and things are on those days, and we're expecting them to train – boys and girls, expecting them to train with us beforehand and then go off and play a game. And, you know, it's just – it's not setting them up for success. From a female perspective as well, when you mention about work, Coops, you know, we have a significant drop-off in that age bracket where females can start to look for work, part-time work, casual work, whatever it is. And, you know, when they start seeing a bank balance go up because it's time and a half on a Sunday, I want to work on a Sunday. So, and look, it's easy for me to sit here and say this, that, you know, scrap the Sundays and try and get your trainings midweek or mornings or whatever you can do. But obviously venues become a part of that. You know, generally there's midweek domestic, senior domestic, or depending on the club, you know, the junior domestic runs midweek. And so, you know, understanding of, but if we're talking perfect world, there'd be no Sunday trainings. I think that would suit from a multitude of being able to play other sports, but also being able to work or being able to have so even just social time as kids with friends and family.
Yeah, it's a difficult space to be in. I think like the Sundays has just always been when there's been core space. Like I feel like that's the reason behind it, is that, you know, you can get courts on a Sunday morning because nobody else wants it.
And well, I think there's a bit senior of domestic's not going to play on a Sunday. Yeah. Tell me anybody.
Not until 6 p.m.
Yeah.
And even then,
you're
rough.
Probably, yeah. You know, so it's like you might, I think there's like a division maybe at Diamond Valley that maybe plays on a Sunday, but it's rare.
And it's very loosely played. Like it is usually Sunday barbecue, then roll into a social game of basketball. And
then
you
sit in the car park with your Esky for a bit.
Yeah, you're not playing. And it's certainly not your junior athletes.
But yeah, so, and you know, we have to be cognizant of the fact that those sort of things and those programs or those competitions do bring in income for clubs to be able to survive. So, you know, that's why Sunday is open, because no one wants to really compete on those days from a, you know, anybody over the age of probably 20, or that's when, you know, your NBL ones, your big Vs and all that sort of running as well. So, you know, it's, yeah, it makes it really difficult for everybody.
Well, it is, and it's tough, as you say. Like you mentioned Big V and senior basketball and the like. It's difficult to get your senior players that are playing in your program to then come and coach a junior team when they have to maybe play on the Saturday night, late night, then come in on the Sunday morning, train a junior team because you want them involved with the program, then potentially boot off to play in a doubleheader weekend. That's a tough gig. Like, so now you're missing out potentially on coaches. So, and again, we're completely aware of the court space issues. Like if we could wave a magic wand and sort
we're
of say,
talking
hey,
perfect world.
Yeah, this is perfect world stuff. But it's interesting. I was talking to a coach during the week, walk past and say, like, hey, where are all your kids? And they're like, oh yeah, footy. It's like, oh yeah, but your son's still here. And he's like, yeah, well, he's going in like 5 minutes. So, you know, just how it rolls.
And he has to be because you're here.
Exactly right. I can wait a little bit longer here, but it was interesting talking to him. He's like, you can tell the kids that go to basketball training before they go and play footy. He's like, they're more switched on. And you can imagine what it's like freezing cold at 9:30 on a Sunday morning. Those kids aren't really functioning until sort of 10, 15 or so. And you're probably three quarters of the way through a game at that point. But he's like, look, it's amazing how many kids go to basketball training first. You can see their hand-eye coordination is better. They're awake. They're alert. And it's a really interesting space to be in because it's like, well, what's your warm-up look like, I suppose, for AFL if they were in that space? But how transferable is basketball into other sports? And that's probably what we're going to talk a little bit more about in this space, is the risk of the early specialization with athletes versus the multi-sport athletes. Like, Coops, did you play anything other than basketball growing up?
Yeah, I started in field hockey. I played a bit of lacrosse.
Did you wear the long socks?
Yeah, but I
there were shin pads underneath. I think
they were quite high at that point.
Two bands around the top.
Yeah, like, and then they kind of go lower as you get cooler, you know. Yeah. So they were still like at knee level when I finished. Lacrosse, a little bit AFL, not too much because I was pretty soft. A lot of cricket, loved cricket. What else did I do? Tried everything. Yeah, just loved playing sport, loved being in a team. Loved every opportunity to get out and challenge myself and be in a team environment. I loved being around sport as I was growing up.
Yeah, what about you, Zoe?
I didn't really play. I played a bit of netball, and then when I couldn't throw the ball the length of the court because that's against the rules, I
stupid
thought,
rule.
This isn't
stupid
for me.
Yeah.
So that was the end of my netball career. But I kind of from a not an organized point of view. So I liked sort of playing different sports. Like we'd play cricket, particularly beach cricket, AFL, golf, all that sort of stuff. But not in an organized fashion. I was probably a little bit different. I only really had a love for basketball, so I didn't really want to play anything else or try anything else. Looking back, you know, I probably should have given some more things a go. If I could have my time again, I'd play soccer. But I just enjoyed playing those other sports just for fun and just sort of socially, mostly with, you know, friends and family and things like that. Because I wasn't forced into specialization. I just wanted that.
Yeah, and I think that's the difference there straight away. Like, I mean, you're the youngest in your family from a brother and sister perspective. So you kind of get dragged along to things. And like, how many have we seen the youngest kid in the family just like be a gun at various things? You know,
I mean, right?
Yeah, well, case in point. Like, but it's that kind of thing. Like, you get hooked to it, I suppose. Yeah. Like, you're exposed to things a little bit earlier. You kind of have to fight for survival almost, it feels like, at times to even get seen and heard. Like, you look at it like that. I suppose that early specialization is when you quit every other sport to focus on one sport. I think that's the difference. Like, you didn't quit sports to focus on one sport. You did everything, but the love was basketball, which is fine. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But it's a difficult spot to be in. Like, we're seeing kids younger and younger quit every other sport to really focus on one at like 9 and 10 years old. I don't see how that's healthy. Like, how do we prevent that from happening?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think what you're talking about with the love of the game, like that's the most important part of this. That's the theme. And like, I'm going through some mid-year evaluations with my MPP kids, and obviously that's out there. Those are our top-tier kids in the development side of things. And a lot of my coach feedback at the moment is just fall in love with the game. Like, you're at this point where you've achieved some things, like, you know, maybe they were part of this, you know, silver winning, you know, medal team at Nationals. And it's right now, it's not much more than that. It's like, you don't need to keep creating all these goals. Like, you know, it's more about just fall in love with the game, want to be in the gym, want it, you know, that amazing footage of Steph Curry where he stands in the corner and he hits 104 threes in a row and then gets angry that he misses the 105th. And it's like, that's, you know, that's what will get you to where you want to go, is that love of the game. And so it's definitely it has to be organic. It has to be individualized, as in like what Zoe went through, that she just loved the sport. And at the end of the day, she just, that's where she wanted to put her energy. That's where she found the most, for you, but, you know, that's where you found the most joy and that's where you wanted to be. And I think that's a really important part of this. Like, how many of those conversations are we having? You know, are we having conversations with those kids that are starting to refine really early and it's more basketball, more basketball? How many conversations are we having about, did you enjoy it today? You know, how are you feeling about this? You know, is it way too goal driven? you know, at under 14s and they're already thinking about the NBA and things like that? Or are we still trying to prioritize the fun, and so that even if they do just naturally become specialized, it's still the right way? And I think we all play a part in that. Coaches, parents, team managers, anybody that's involved can just keep asking those questions.
I think something that's really important as coaches that we can do, and to use another sport analogy, we got to stop changing the goalposts. So if we're at the start of a season and you're coaching a team and let's say three of the athletes has football starting in, I don't even know when it starts, but let's say May, starting in May, and that will mean they'll potentially miss 30 minutes, the last 30 minutes of your practice, starting in May on Sundays. If you say okay to that, then that's okay. Like, what I see a lot of is, yeah, no worries, we can sort that. Team starts losing, now all of a sudden that's not okay anymore. And then that forces those athletes to think that they have to make a choice between whichever sport. And that's where I see a lot of the problems start to occur. And I think, you know, obviously there is a time where you have to sort of say, okay, you know, this is what I want to do, this is the sport I want to focus my time on and try and achieve in. But I think the longer we can have them playing multiple sports and getting those different experiences and building those different skill sets and even just muscle groups that basketball doesn't offer naturally, I think the better off it's going to be for us.
I think importantly there too is when we're talking about choice and supporting our parents out there that are listening to this and coach parents and knowing that not every family is going to be able to provide the ability for their son and or daughter to play multiple organized sports, you know, maybe because of finance, maybe because of time, whatever it may be. So just thinking about if you know, you are in that situation, it doesn't have to be organized sport. So if there is a choice that has to be made around, hey, look, this is all we can afford for whatever reason it may be, and there's no right or wrong, that their child has to choose that one organized sport, but they love another, well, let's try and nurture that in another way. Let's, as a family, let's go down and kick the footy. Yeah. Or as a group of friends, let's find a way to kick the soccer ball. Or maybe that you have to play a school sport, and so you play that sport or something different, you know, through school because they obviously provide the infrastructure. So I think that, yes, those choices are going to be taken out of our hands sometimes because of those outside factors, but it doesn't mean we can't nurture, those other passions.
Mm. I think sometimes too, non-organized sport, I loved everything that I used to play because it wasn't organized. Mm. Like I loved just it, even just at times pick up, like just playing 1-on-1, 2-on-2, 3-on-3, you know, that sort of stuff in basketball as well. But not having it be a, you know, this time, this day, every week until from here to here, you know, you have to do this, you have to do that. So it became a, you know, oh, do you want to go, like, and it was generally when we're on holidays sort of as a family, but it, you know, it was like, hey, let's go outside and play cricket. Let's go play tennis. Let's go play golf. Let's go do this. Like, and so you did it because you wanted to. So therefore you automatically enjoyed it more because you wanted to be there. But there also wasn't that pressure as well of having to perform or having to acquire this skill set at a certain level and all that sort of stuff. So you could just, you know, go and enjoy it and have some fun. And it kind of, you know, takes the shackles off a little bit for then when you are, for me, in the sport that I wanted to be good at, you know, then when it was time to sort of reset into that, like I was ready for that, my mind was kind of cleared and, you know, I was ready to go and it sort of, yeah, blew the cobwebs out, I guess.
Well, it's funny how many coaches say, oh, our kids just don't play enough pickup. Our kids just don't play enough pickup. It's like, yeah, okay, well, when was the last time you played pickup at your training session?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Well, they just walked in here and said, all right, let's go. And you just almost see the look of confusion on their face, like, what? Well, no, we're supposed to do alley drill for 15 minutes. That's on their plan. Like,
it's really important we get our baseline out of bounds in.
Yeah, but it's that kind of thing, though. I mean, you really look at it, it's like the ability to go and just free play, that's where the fun actually happens. That's where a lot of the learning will happen with the kids. Now, I have to put the asterisk on this. This does not just mean we roll the balls out of training sessions. We don't coach anything. We don't teach and we don't layer and those types of things. Still very valuable. But every now and again, it doesn't hurt to just sort of break it open a little bit and say, actually, let's just have some fun with this training session. Because like I look at the early specialization in particular, like I actually did some notes for this podcast, sets unrealistic expectations straight away. You know, all our eggs are in that basket of NBA, WNBA, that's where we're going because we're going to specialize from 10 years old and put everything into this. All our training sessions are going to be built around basketball. All of it's no. Like, we got four personal trainers. No. Like, that's not helpful to anyone. That's actually going to hurt the kids more than it's going to do anything. The impact socially, like the ability to just go and integrate with different groups of people is now taken away because you can only hang out with basketball people and those types of things. Please don't take this as an anti-basketball podcast. There's some reasons coming up as to why basketball is the best sport in the world. I promise you we're getting to that. But you do have to be really mindful too. You can fall out of love with the game because you don't get anything else. You only get basketball all the time. And as much as we love basketball all the time, I can understand why people would sort of fall out of love with it. You can be overcoached, which is a massive issue because you're always searching for the next coach and the next coach and the next coach, and that can cause confusion for athletes. So they get mixed messages. It's kind of an overuse injury, I suppose, in that, and you mentioned it before, Zoe, like the muscle movement and those types of things. When you only play one sport, you only experience one type of like repetitions, I suppose, for lack of a bit. Like, you don't have different sports loading up on knees and ankles and hips and those types of things. So you only really move one way. I don't know if that's all that healthy. Like, whereas you look at the multi-sport reasons to play, kids have to adapt on the run. Like, straight away, they have to learn from different things, different ways of playing. Is that transferable into this? I learned that over there, but can this be applied to this game? Continual challenges, transferable skills, different types of movement patterns, which we've just spoken about. And it kind of gives you a break from various people and games. Like, I think the break is actually a really important part of it too, that you might be having a bit of a hard time with, say, cricket. Like, you're just continually getting out. It's like, oh, cricket sucks. It's like, well, no, cricket doesn't suck, just in a little bit of a bad run of form. But if all of a sudden it's like, yeah, but I get to go play my basketball game, it's a nice release mentally, I feel, for players as well. So the reasons to play multiple sports, there's tons of them, in all honesty. So coaches, don't be fearful if your players are playing 3 and 4. If they can manage that, fantastic. Let them manage it. But there's a reason basketball is the greatest sport in the world, which is it is the most transferable sport. In my opinion, my opinion, Rob's opinion, not worth much, understandable, but in my opinion, it is the best sport. So what we're sort of looking at is what other sports out there have skills that are transferable into basketball? Because we know the basketball skills transfer out, like whether it be bouncing, running, moving, shooting, physical contact, those types of things. The first one, Coops, and I'm going to give you a layup on this one straight off the bat. Why does soccer help basketball?
Yeah, where to begin? Obviously, you know where I'm going to begin. It's scanning.
I thought you were going to go with Sunderland.
But yeah. No, I'll tee that off in a second.
Yeah, don't mention Sunderland yet. We're not allowed to talk about it today.
Yeah, remember, it's a special day today. look, for me, it starts with scanning. This is something that's become a really prominent area in teaching the game of soccer, connecting it to success, the studies that they've done on the world's best, Ronaldo, Messi, where their eyes are, where their eyes are in the 1v1 contest, where their eyes are in terms of scanning, like the amount of times that they will turn their head to take snapshots of the game prior to the catch, or obviously the trap, in terms of them receiving the ball, so that they can make the best decision, in 0 seconds, 1 second. That's basketball. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get our eyes to see through the game and take those sorts of snapshots and then be able to get the ball and shoot it or stampede or move it. And so I think that being in that 3D environment, developing that spatial awareness and having to use that scanning and move your head around is such a fantastic translatable skill. And then I think the obvious one, and we know this from numerous stories, I think Hakeem Olajuwon was probably one of the best ones, is the footwork. Being able to have that nimble foot speed, the ability to to shift your weight and fake with the ball at your feet and change pace, change direction again are obviously things that we know, you know, make better basketballers. So I think, you know, soccer is just a fantastic place to start. And obviously we all know that it's an amazing game.
Beautiful game.
Beautiful game.
The other beautiful game. That it is an international sport for a start.
And yes.
To be honest, that's kind of why I love it, is you get the different styles. Very similar to basketball. You see different countries play different ways, and you just see the flair and the creativity and those types of things. Basketball and soccer, I think, go hand in hand. Like for mine, are the big two sports that I think really do belong on the international stage compared to a lot of the other sports out there. Zoe, you don't watch a heap of soccer. Like, you have a passing interest for sure, but you're starting to learn more and more about it. Where do you see the transfer happen between soccer and basketball?
Well, footwork is the obvious one for me. The ability to be effective without your hands, and I know that sounds so obvious, but what I mean that for transferring that into basketball, we often, I feel like I'm often saying at trainings, you know, feet follow action, feet, you know, catch with your feet, you know, all those sort of things. We don't have as much of an emphasis, I think, on our feet as we do everything else, because we're often talking about shot technique and
shooting's things the master like skill.
Shooting's the master skill, of course.
It is in soccer too, I believe.
but I don't think we have an emphasis on the lower half of our body and how we move and our balance and just the way we shift and all those sort of things. So I think, you know, like I mentioned before, if I had my time again, soccer would be what I would play to try and just sort of, I guess,
compliment
basketball, because of that, from a balance, a footwork perspective. I feel like I would have been probably a 60% better defender laterally with my movement if I'd played soccer as well. And it's not that soccer's overly lateral, but it's more you are just solely reliant on your feet and your movement from the lower half of your body. So the muscle groups that you're having to work, I don't think we naturally work in our sport.
Yep, and it's interesting when you look at the size of a soccer pitch, obviously similar shape from a basketball court, there's no question, but the ability to have to play in space is very similar to what we have to deal with in basketball. So I think it sets you up really well in that space, but also the ability to have to play in no space and play in really tight angles and actually start to understand passing angles, what's open, what's not open, what will be open with an extra pass, like at the risk of throwing in another sport, like a hockey assist type stuff, like the pass that leads to the assist. That stuff in soccer, I think, really translates to basketball really well. Like, I think it really complements on our side. And I think going back the other way, like that 360 thing you talk about, Coops, you got to know where you are all the time. Mm. If you catch the ball in transition on the fly, it doesn't matter what's ahead of you because the contact could be coming from the side or whatever the case may be. Thankfully, in basketball, you don't have to worry about someone two-footing you out on the break or anything like that, because something's gone drastically wrong if we get to that point.
Rob, you haven't played Masters basketball in Ballarat on a Thursday night, let me tell you.
No, you're absolutely right, and won't be. There is not an insurance premium in the world that is able to get me over the line there.
I think from a tactical point of view as well, you know, I think of like you mentioned, I certainly don't know anywhere near as much as the two of you do about soccer or football, but... But just watching the parts that I have watched, you can see from a tactical standpoint the way they set up their defense, the way, you know, it can go from one alignment to a different alignment, you know, in the space of a possession, and dependent upon who's on the field, who's not, how they attack that, like you mentioned before, how different. You know, you watch Premier League and you see one way, you watch the Spanish League, you see another way, like all those sort of things. It's just so, you know, if they were to pick it up and dribble it, I feel like it's the same sport. Like, it's just...
But even things like corners, throw-ins...
Little plays, all that sort of stuff. And you know, having that, you know, I think that offside rule, you know, I liken it to like our 3 seconds and you know, all that sort of
it
stuff.
It gets called. That's the difference.
Well, yes. but you know, all that sort of stuff, or from a tactical standpoint, I'm certainly not saying I could rock up to a soccer game and coach it, but I think with a little bit of time and understanding of what those tactics are, I think it's very similar in what we do and how we have to change things on the fly and all that sort of stuff.
Well, even how long players have to hold onto the ball. Like, I know we're really big on move the ball on quickly in basketball and things like that, and that's very translatable from soccer as well. Like one touch, catch it, get it on quickly, don't catch it and hold onto it. There will be times, obviously, where you have to do that, but I think it is one of those sports where we can, like, I know, Coos, we've stolen a lot of drills from soccer over the years. Like the Rondo drills in particular are phenomenal. Like if you're not across those, just go and Google, like, football, Rondo drills, and it'll come up with like a whole bunch of like 5v2 type things. And it's all about being able to accept a pass and being able to move a pass on really quickly, which is obviously fairly vital in soccer, but it's something that we could be doing a lot more of in basketball too. Like I think we'll continue to steal from soccer over the years. Like I think that's a really good one on my end.
Well, and that's a sport that led the way in scaling as well. So minimizing the size of their pitch, you know, minimizing the amount of players on the pitch, like all that sort of stuff. You know, we're slowly getting there, but I'm still hearing about associations here in Victoria that are using a size 6 for, you know, under 8s. And so, you know, and below. So we've got to get on board that. You can see the benefits to what it does. And like I said, soccer are were the leaders in that. They kind of, you know, took it and ran with it, and then everyone kind of followed.
Yep. I think a nice theme of this for our coaches too is generalizing. And I was really lucky. I had some exchanges with a coach from Melbourne City from their academy, Mark Topic. Shout out to him. We had some fantastic conversations recently, just, you know, via Zoom, via email, sharing resources, you know, talking about how, you know, each sport could help each other and what tactics you were using and how do you defend and all these sorts of things. So as much as we're promoting generalization in our athletes, like we challenge you two coaches to get out there and get involved in some other sports and see what you can pull from them.
Most definitely, but never leave basketball.
Never, never,
never leave basketball.
We'll find you.
That was creepy. Not
the first time you said it, I feel like, either. So, Zoe, you did say that you'd played netball a little bit as a junior. I feel like there's less transferable skills from netball than people would probably equate to. Like, I think you go the eye test and it's like, oh, basketball, netball, very similar, rings, similar court, all that sort of stuff. Did you find it the same?
No.
All right, so cricket.
Look, in fairness, I was young at the time and probably a bit impatient in the sense that I really didn't like the way you were pigeonholed into a position. So you can't run in certain places or you can't, you know, not everyone can shoot the ball. And, you know, like I said, quick story time. Is that our first one?
Yeah, probably.
So my first game of netball, didn't know the rules at all, was filling in, and I got put in goal defence, of course, and I rebounded the ball and I pivoted and I saw that the goalkeeper at the other end was doing up her shoelace. And so my goal shooter was standing under the basket unattended. So I launched that thing and hit her on the hands, perfect, right under the basket. Here I am about to pat myself on the back, and then sweetheart umpire comes across and says, no, sorry, over a third. Like, what is that? So that sort of started my what is going on here. But, you know, yes, I think if I'm going to be nice about it though, from a passing and cutting perspective, it's very good. It's very good in terms of them being able to transfer, seeing space, cutting to space, cutting with purpose, because if you don't, you can't get open. So that's probably the most I would take out of it though.
Sweetheart umpire Coops. That will come back at some point. I'm with you, Rob.
I've stored that one like in front of the Rolodex.
But when I call her that, you can picture her now, can't you?
Yep, I can.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
I genuinely can. But I do agree with you. Like the passing angle thing I think is really valid. The ability to cut, change pace, stop, start. I think that is something we absolutely take from netball a lot coming across into basketball. I think every coach has done the drill in their life where it's like first to 50 passes, no dribble. If you lose the ball, you cough it up, you stay on your number, but it goes to the other team just to teach that passing and cutting. Like, and I know Zoe did it on the weekend, like it was 3-on-3, no dribble. And the players would still play 6 feet away from their player. It's like, they can't drive past you. Like, go and climb into the ball. Like, go and be as disruptive as possible in that. So I think there is a lot that we still can take from it. The starting, stopping thing for sure. Cutting, change of pace, change of direction. The change of pace one's a big one.
Yeah.
I feel like going from nothing to flat out back to nothing again. Post feeds, Well, I feel like there's a bit of that because of the angles you have to play at to try and find different angles into the post. So I think there is some stuff we can still take from it.
Yeah, but I was probably being harsh because my thoughts towards the sport. But, you know, I did also, though, feel when we talk about what's best for our athletes, I do remember, though, when I was playing both, how quickly knee and ankle pain started to appear. And as soon as I took netball out, it could have been overload as well. Yep. I was probably doing too much. But yeah, that was just something that was really, that I remember just going, oh, this is, you know, I never had this before. And then all of a sudden it's just appeared. So, whether there's a skill set for that we weren't really being taught you know, I wasn't landing the right way or anything or something like that. But yeah, I remember I think we need to be cognizant too as coaches of other injuries that can form by being a multi-sport athlete.
Yep, for sure. So we'll move on from the netball space. Cricket. So Coops, this was your jam growing up. you've been compared to the mini Bradman.
Yep, definitely.
By yourself.
By myself.
Anything transferable from cricket across to the basketball space or vice versa?
Story time, Rob.
Oh, yes.
These are always the best ones.
Talking.
If he drops a sweetheart umpire in this, I'm going to lose it.
You could see it burning, couldn't you, from my toes all the way. If I saw her now, I reckon I'd still have a crack at her for it.
Oh, sweetheart. I'm got to get my wits about me. Okay, story time. I was talking with a young athlete the other day, and just again coming back to what I was talking about earlier about just falling in love with the sport. And then I just happened to say, "Oh, do you know who Don Bradman is?" And of course, that young man said no, and you know, had to explain. He's obviously, you know, one of the greatest cricket players of all time. But for me, you know, a batsman in particular, even a bowler, in the specificity of the sport and especially their own master skill of, you know, being able to hit that ball that's coming at you at, you know, sometimes 150 Ks, you know, forced Don Bradman, you know, out onto his porch with a cricket stump and a golf ball and just hitting that ball into the wall over and over and over again. And yeah, you got to be a little bit crazy to do that, but you know, most of our elite athletes are. You know,
there's something there.
Yeah, exactly. But importantly, it was just like, you know, that was one of the best examples that I could think of a person who is just so in love with the challenge of what the sport brings them, the seeking of excellence and. And the enjoyment of having the success of just hitting that ball, you know, which is the exact same width as, you know, as the stump, into the wall over and over and over again. And my not challenge, but just my push to this athlete was like, this is what greatness is. This is, you know, the kind of level that you need to get to if you want to achieve the dreams that we're talking about. So when I look at cricket, I think there's an attention to detail that can translate into habits that are going to definitely help basketballers be better athletes, but also better people in that respect.
Yep, for sure. I think it's the hand-eye coordination thing. Like for sure, I mean, you're talking the discipline of it, but the ability to hand-eye things is very important. I think it's more a tactical thing. Like we sort of went through the notes of this beforehand as we were talking about it, like, but field placements. Bowler's line, like you have to bowl in this area here to force that shot for this to happen, can be tactically very similar to what we do in basketball. Like we want you to force this player to their left because they're a little worse on that in comparison to, or force them into a pull-up jump shot because that's going to be better for us, those types of things. So I think there is some stuff there, but it's probably not the most transferable across. You've sort of hit on it a little bit, so we'll go to the next two, tennis and golf. Fairly individual sports, it'd be fair to say, other than doubles, obviously, before people come for me in the comments. but largely individual sports. So is there anything we can take from that, or is it probably a bit of a follow-on from the cricket that you were just talking about?
Just to kind of steal what we were talking about earlier, I think the mental side of that those games is the biggest transfer in, you know, standing out in the field in cricket, you know, 6 hours or, you know, 3 2-hour sessions, being able to switch off, you know, relax, and then now the bowler's coming back in. Okay, I've got to switch back on. you know, so having that mental fortitude to be ready when you need to be. You know, looking at tennis, you know, obviously the incredible speed of the game, but the ability to bounce back. You know, so you're having this one-on-one battle. You know, there's a lot of mistakes. You know, how do you stay resilient? How do you respond from a mistake and, you know, remain focused in that battle? And then again, I mean, golf, like I love golf. I play a lot of golf and just that, the challenge of playing yourself and also just a discipline that I think carries on through life. You know, Greg Popovich talks about, you know, character is what you do when no one's watching. So if you're off on one side of the fairway and you accidentally, you know, kick the ball or hit the ball, you know, that's a stroke. And, you know, if nobody else sees it, you know, are you writing it down?
No.
And there's Rob's character in a sentence right there.
Definitely don't play golf, mate. This is, I can only be annoyed with myself for so long, and I feel like golf would exemplify that even further. But it is one of those areas too. I do agree with you. I think the mental side of both is really important. Like, and even like you can play three bad shots in golf, but you play one spectacular one and it all fixes. But you can play three spectacular shots and all it takes is one bad one and it all, you know, it turns into six or seven bad ones. And it's kind of similar with tennis too. Like you think about their scoring system. You can play three terrible shots. All of a sudden you're down 40 love. You got to try and find a way to claw yourself back into that. Like that's the mental side of things, I think, is really important.
Well, the lateral movement in tennis as
that's
well.
That's a big one.
Like huge, being able to change direction quickly. You see the position that they play in, like, They're never upright. They're only upright in between points. And then the rest of the time, they're down in that same position that we're – or close to, sorry, the same position that we're encouraging athletes to play in, both offense and defense.
Yeah, I think the tennis one is actually quite transferable from a movement perspective. I'm completely with you. And even just the setup, you might go to their forehand side three times in a row as a little bit of a setup. It's like, yeah, we'll make that wing catch three or four times in a row.
Yeah.
Just to get the back cut on the fifth one. So there's a little bit of the setup. The inner game of tennis is a phenomenal read for anyone that's looking for some stuff on the mental side of things, where you're not only playing the opponent, that you're playing yourself and sort of living in that moment of trying to, okay, it's maybe not going well. It's 40 degrees out. I'm dripping sweat. I feel like I'm in the gaze room where I'm looking at the pictures of Andrew Gaze in here and even he's sweating. Like, it's so warm in here. Like, it's that kind of thing where it's like, well, how do you find something from within to then go and still drive yourself forward in the various areas? So I think a lot of it is mental in that space. Swimming and athletics. So is there anything that sort of transfers across from your mind in that space?
I've always been a big advocate for young, really young athletes doing little athletics. I think no different reason to what we've already spoken about, just getting the, from a coordination point of view, from a, you know, start, stop, accelerate, decelerate, you know, all that sort of stuff, using different muscles that you might not use, I think is huge for learning how to run properly. Is massive. So, like I know, like to use myself as an example, if you were to watch me run even in my prime, it looked like it hurt. Like it didn't, but it looked like it did. Like it certainly wasn't the right way to run. So if I'd done, you know, some type of little athletics or something like that, I might have been more efficient in the way that I moved. So, yeah, I've been really big on that. Swimming for mine is more – The transferable skill would probably be more from an endurance perspective. So being able to play out games, having that lung capacity to be able to play out games. But from I don't think maybe from a movement perspective as such. But what you do get from swimming is discipline, because we talk about how hard it is to get up for a 6:30 a.m. session. They've already been training for an hour and a half. Yeah. Like it is. So they are, and again, we talk about, you know, some of our best athletes are a little bit quirky. Swimmers are the same. Like your job is literally to swim up and down and just stare at a black line and get better at it, you know. So, but that discipline to get better and to be constantly, yes, you race others, but in practice you're often just racing yourself and trying to, you know, better your PB and all that sort of stuff. So having that discipline to get that done is, I think, one of the great things that swimming teaches young athletes.
Yeah, I think the other part of that too is the low impact, like low injury risk.
Yeah.
Movement pattern / sport / activity. And obviously, as we were talking about at the start, Rob, you know, injuries are starting to peak, you know, weather's getting cooler, like all those different things. The ability, you know, and we find this a lot, you know, the athlete's like, oh yeah, I'm injured. So, you know, injury means I'm just going to sit down for the next 2 weeks. It's like, well, no, I mean, you could be in the pool, you know, keeping your conditioning up, potentially bettering your conditioning so that when you come back, you haven't lost that side of things. So I think that's a missed opportunity a lot of the time for our athletes.
Yep. And even just having to play against the clock. Like, I think there's something to that as well of just I need to make sure my technique is perfect so that when I get to that point, I can hit a PB. Like, a very incidental change can make a millisecond difference that could put you into a qualification or out of a qualification. Mm-hmm. And when we think about just our muscle memory and our ability to shoot the ball and those types of things, I think for players, small things do make big differences in that space. So the swimming athletics, I think there's something too. You've been a big ballet fan all your life, Zoe?
I'm sure you can all picture me as a ballet dancer. No.
Not necessarily, but we are definitely going to talk about
not. I definitely think that dance, any type of dance, the only reason I use ballet as an example is because of James Heard. I used to get picked on for having done ballet, and then you watch the way he used to play, the way he'd move, how light he was on his feet, how strong he was through his core, and you can see that, you know, obviously football has also contributed to that, not saying it's all the ballet stuff, but it laid the foundation for him, and just body awareness is huge. You see understanding their footwork and even understanding rhythm is it might not seem like it transfers to our game, but it really does. You know, being able to move and flow with the transition of the ball and all those sort of things. So, I've been really big on not just ballet, but any type of dance type action or activity being really highly transferable and helpful to any type of basketball or anybody who wants to be a basketballer.
Coops, you've been one to bust a move over the years. You're a big believer that dance will translate across?
Definitely banned from dance floors all across the world. I think Zoe hit the nail on the head. The flow, rhythm, adaptability, strength, the core strength part I think is massive. That, God, what a fun way to potentially get off the basketball court and enjoy music and dance and being free and creative, but knowing that all those things are only going to make you a better hooper. Get out and dance, everybody.
Well, and I think too, there's a bit of like what you're saying there is, you know, just having that ability to be that bit free, that bit, you know, I don't care who's, you know, sort of watching me, whether I'm good, whether I'm bad. You know, if you can even take just that into your practice, now when we say, hey, do this, that's slightly out of your comfort zone, you're more likely to do it. Therefore, you're more likely to improve because you're in that headspace of, I couldn't really care what people think of me. And I think it's huge. It's particularly huge for our young female athletes. You know, it's... Judgment is a really big problem.
They're on TikTok enough. Don't encourage more of it.
No, yes. Not TikTok dance. Genuine dance.
Gotcha.
But, you know, judgment is a problem. You know, fearing judgment is a problem for our young female athletes. And so being able to, you know, shake that loose a little bit and...
Oh, you had the perfect shake it off. Like, it was right there, Zoe. It was right there.
You tell those academy kids you loved a bit of Tay-Tay. Now you're...
I'm not averse to it.
But, yeah, it's... I think it'd be great for them. And as Coop said, it just a really fun way to still be working on certain skill sets but just away from the floor.
Yep. That was our stoicism of the pod moment brought to you by Zoe Carr.
There you go. Converted.
Who'd have thought?
Converted. Certainly not me when you were raging at drivers the other night coming home. Like it's, there was no stoicism involved there.
Let's rewind to about 25 minutes when I was barking at the umpire from over 20 years ago.
Yeah. That's not a stoic moment. That's a deep-seated resentment moment that's locked away there.
Way to let that go, Carl. Way to let that go.
The last one we'll touch on, the one that rivals basketball for participation, I suppose, in AFL. Anything transferable? No? Cool. Let's move on. Yeah. No, I'm joking. No.
It's a funny one. I think in the AFL, creating the Category B rookie option was a pretty good demonstration of how much they understand their sport compared to other sports. Now, yes, there's spatial awareness, toughness, conditioning, like those sorts of things that are really helpful. But, you know, you're talking about a league that created a player that doesn't impact the salary cap because they want to bring in players from other sports because they feel like they can just teach their sport pretty easily. Smart, and all credit to them. I think it shows a sport that's really self-aware about what they're good at and what they're not good at. And they know how to, kind of pillage from basketball and other sports in that respect. So, yes, there's areas that do help us, but I think AFL's smart in the way that they use other sports to better themselves.
Yep, no question. I'd say the toughness thing probably translates across. Like, very rarely do you see an AFL player come into basketball and be well-skilled or anything like that, but their ability to, like, hunt down a rebound or get a 50-50 contest, that is usually pretty good, I must admit. Like, from that end, there's no question. Zoe, what about you? Have you seen much that you sort of believe transfers over?
I don't think so much from a skill set perspective. I think from an S&C perspective, like, they are elite athletes. They have to be.
They're short, usually.
Yeah, but they have to be with the space that they have to cover and all those sort of things. I think one of the best things that we take from AFL is probably just that comfort in physicality. So if athletes are coming across, like you sort of mentioned there, you know, that fear of, oh, am I going to knock them over or am I going to do – they don't have that because that's been their job. So I think that's probably one of the best things we can take.
Yeah, it's incredible. Like, looking through all these, I feel like if you were just to grab our average 16-year-old basketballer, you could drop them into pretty much any of the sports we've gone through here and they'd be okay.
Yeah.
Like, they may not be elite or anything like that, but they would survive and potentially thrive in those other sports. Whereas I'm looking through the other sports, I'm not sure how many of those come back the other way in comparison. So when we're talking about multi-sport athletes, no problems. Like, play as many sports as you can, but make sure basketball is one of them because it probably has the most transferable skills, I believe, into other sports.
We can't have a pod without me talking about shooting Robs. So I know. I apologize for
mentioning
waiting.
The master skill earlier was not enough.
Rattled that cage, didn't I?
Apologies to everyone for waiting this long to hear me talk about it. Shooting is the master skill. And importantly, to remember with our athletes that as they're generalizing, they still need to prioritize time to work on their shot. And if they want to progress through the sport, you just have to do it. It's just not one of those things. And again, that's where I think it comes back to the AFL. It's like, if you kind of know how to kick and, you know, you just kind of kick in the backyard every now and then, that kind of thing, like, you could still play a pretty high level of football. If you're not working on your shooting, it's game over.
When you look at Mason Cox, right, like, just sort of came over here and all of a sudden he's, you know, one of the top players in the league, you know. And so it's, yeah, I think you're spot on.
But what's interesting, like, you spoke about it. He was on a podcast or a radio interview the other day and they're like, hey, if you could play AFL or NBA, which would you pick? And didn't even take a beat, NBA. Like, straight away. Like, it's amazing how many players do go across to the AFL side. Because that's probably where there's more opportunity at the higher end, just in terms of sheer volume and numbers and those types of things. But if they were given the option, they'd probably rather be basketballers, I feel like, in most cases with these kids. But, I mean, the shooting thing, like, we could talk, say, archery as an example. Like, does archery translate across to basketball? Yeah, I think it probably would with it. Like, how you set up for a free throw would be very similar to
targets.
Thinking about your breathing, target, where are you aiming, do I have to take into consideration that rim sort of leans up a little bit on the right side, so I have to adjust for that. Is that same as adjusting for the wind? Those types of things. I think there is something to it, and I do wholeheartedly believe if you play basketball, you will be better off for it, not just with your sport, but just in general. Like, because there's both sides of it. There's the individual side where you have to work on your skill set, shooting in particular, like you're talking about, Coops. But there's also the team aspect where, okay, yes, you have to perform your stuff really well, but that has to fit within what everyone else is doing as well. Otherwise, you're just an individual. And, you know, individual sports people are usually very well disciplined, but not always the best socially either, it'd be fair to say. They've had to sacrifice a lot to get to where they are. So completely understandable. So when you're looking at this, how do you help players stop specialising? Expose them to different sports within your training session. There's nothing wrong with playing a little bit of soccer to start off your training session, or doing something a little bit different. You know, Zoe's been a big fan of knuckleball over the years, which is a little bit similar to netballish, I'm going to assume.
Oh, you can still dribble.
Yeah.
And everyone can shoot. Yeah. And you can pass it wherever you want.
Oh, so it's just basketball.
No, it's just with your knuckles. So it's just taking away the ability to catch properly. And to be honest, that's got nothing really to do with generalisation. It's more just...
It's funny.
Fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and when things are a bit rough, you just throw in a game of knuckleball.
But there is something to it, though, because it's just a nice little freshen up. I feel like that's probably the big thing I find. Don't fear players choosing another sport over yours. Like, if you make your environment fun, they'll stick. I think that's the biggest thing to really get across to coaches. Don't fear the other sports. We're actually putting them in a really good spot by playing basketball, that they can go and play other sports. It'll set them up to be, you know, good at their sports. But don't forget, we're actually coaching people. Like, and that's the biggest thing. We want to make sure that we have the best people coming out of this as possible. And I do genuinely believe that basketball is probably at the forefront of that, is producing the best people possible. So please stick with that if you can. Thank you both for jumping in. Coaches, we will be back on the podcast next week. Good luck with your teams and your coaching, and we will talk to you all then. Look, tune in, enjoy the tribe.